if you didn't do anything else in foundation work and to be around Franklin Bernson, who we find out was quite a remarkable man, you would have said, well, that's good. However, you became involved with Donald W. Reynolds as well.
Yes, I did.
Talk about him and how that relationship with you started.
Donald Reynolds' company is a company called Donray Media Group, and it's headquartered for its administration in Fort Smith, Arkansas. Mr. Reynolds was quite an extraordinary individual. He grew up in Oklahoma City, sold papers on a corner. He earned his way through college. He went to a journalism school, University of Missouri at Columbia. On graduation, he then went into the newspaper business, bought a small paper up in Massachusetts, and sold that about a year later. That wasn't a particular success. And then he moved to Houston and became involved with a gentleman there who got him involved in entrepreneurial activities. The first thing he did was he bought a newspaper in Okmulgee, Oklahoma, and one in Fort Smith, Arkansas. That was the beginning of the Donray Media Group. He was a terrific entrepreneur.
Let me just point out, this guy was a worker bee, as the others we've talked about. I understand in high school, he worked in the summers at a meatpacking plant to pay for his studies.
Yes.
You know, when young people listen to these stories, they ought to know that these people worked hard at the very beginning.
Well, he rode on a cruise from the United States taking cattle to Spain, and he saw a castle in Spain that he ultimately modeled his home in Las Vegas after, from his memory from that cattle trip. He was quite an unusual entrepreneur. He was a very bright guy. At the time of his death, he owned perhaps 45 newspapers. He had an outdoor advertising organization called Donray Outdoor. They had plants around the country, 10 different locations, Tulsa, Oklahoma City, Wichita, and various spots around the country. He even had one in Las Vegas. And that's how he really got into outdoor advertising. He saw an outdoor billboard in Las Vegas, and he wanted space to advertise. He bought the newspaper in Las Vegas, back when Las Vegas was only a town of about 25,000 people. He thought that outdoor advertising was a good way to advertise the newspaper, and he tried to get space on the billboards, and they wouldn't sell it to him. They were sold out. He thought if it was that good a business, he ought to get into that business. So he did. He bought billboards and started the Donray Outdoor Advertising Agency. So he was one heck of an entrepreneur.
He didn't live in Tulsa.
No, he didn't. He lived wherever he wanted to live. Don Reynolds had an apartment in Fort Smith. He had a mansion in Las Vegas that he'd built after this castle. It's probably about 30,000 square feet. He had an apartment in Trump Tower in New York City. He had an apartment in Beverly Hills. He had a home on the lake down in Hot Springs. He had 8 or 10 homes around the country. None of them were in his name. They were all in the name of the business. He had learned early on how to work with the tax codes and write off as many things as he could. He even had airplanes that belonged to the company. And that's how he got around. He had 2 homes in Hawaii, one in Kona and one in Hilo. Both of those were headquarters for him in Hawaii. He bought the newspapers there. Something happened along the way. He had been represented by an attorney here in Tulsa by the name of Doug Fox. Doug Fox was with the Gable Gottwalls firm, a very fine law firm here.
Well, let me just interrupt here by saying that Mr. Reynolds was using a Tulsa law firm because even though he did not live in Tulsa, he did keep an apartment here and he had a friend he would visit and he liked to socialize with Tulsans. Just wanted to explain that. So continue.
Doug decided to get out of the practice of law, and he had represented Reynolds and been on Reynolds' board, but he didn't tell Reynolds that he was doing this. And when he made the move into another company that was going to be an oil company, it upset Reynolds. And yet he left his representation at Doug Fox's law firm for a period of time, but ultimately decided that that wasn't where he wanted to be. So based on their Deloitte Touche accounting firm's recommendations, They interviewed four firms, one of which was my firm. I interviewed with his vice president of administration, a fellow named Pat Patterson, who did the first interview with me. And then the second interview was with Fred Smith, who was the executive head of his companies. And then finally, I got to meet Reynolds, and we just really hit it off quite well. So they engaged me to represent him.
Describe his personality. What was he like?
Reynolds was a small man. He probably stood 5'6 or 5'7. He was a little heavy, but he was outwardly kind of a jovial dwarf. He would hate that description, but it pretty well described him. He was a Buddha-looking sort of guy. He was rather heavy and balding, but he ran the tightest ship on his empire you can imagine. Nobody in his organization would ever dare call him anything other than Mr. Reynolds.
Mm-hmm.
He paid everybody well, but he also paid them what they called a going wage, that if they didn't work out, they could go, and he was happy with it.
Why do you think you two hit it off? Was he very common in the way he was?
Well,
You're very easy to talk to yourself. Was there a sense of humor, you think, that clicked, or what?
I suppose so. You know, we just hit it off quite well. At the time, he was kind of estranged from his board of directors. His previous counsel in the firm that Doug Fox had left had gotten Mr. Reynolds to take off all of the members of his board from his foundation. He had already established a charitable foundation to receive his estate. He had placed this attorney and a stockbroker from New York as the only members of the board of directors of the foundation. And that upset the people that worked for him. In time, I talked to him and said, you know, these people have been loyal to you. They've helped you run your business and build it into what it is today. Why wouldn't you trust them to run the foundation when you're gone? And he agreed with that. He put these people who had been on the foundation back on the foundation board to run it in the event of his death. And I think he appreciated my practical approach to things.
Were there sometimes you would disagree with him and you'd stand your ground and he'd understand eventually, come around?
Yes, he was very willing to accept advice. He accepted advice from professionals, and I advised him to put these people back on his foundation board. The simplest thing is, I said, you trust them to run your business. You've got them as directors of your business. Why wouldn't you trust them to run your business when you're gone?
Yeah.
So it was a very practical approach, and it's hard to argue with that.
What was his wife's name?
He'd had several wives. He was not married at the time I met him. He had been through three fairly unhappy relationships, but had spawned three children from two different wives. One of the wives got to him financially pretty heavily, so he was not too thrilled about the idea of women. In fact, shortly after I signed on to be his counsel, I was invited to his 60th birthday party in Las Vegas at his mansion, which we call the Castle. 15 or 20 of his old girlfriends, as well as most of his managers of his various businesses, were invited, and a lot of his social friends were invited to his 60th birthday party. He had George Burns engaged to entertain, and the original Ink Spots were also there to entertain at his birthday party. According to his employees who were loyal to him, the real reason was to have all of these women that he had dated from time to time there to see each other and see what he had.
He was kind of bragging, wasn't he?
Yeah, see what he had accumulated.
You would know this. Forbes magazine noted that Reynolds' three children would receive trust income of $50,000 a year for life, but would be left only $1 if they unsuccessfully contest his will.
I changed that a little bit. One of the first things that I did for Mr. Reynolds was to look at his estate plan, and he had left a very small percentage to each of his children. I suggested that instead of using a will as the device to transfer his estate, that he ought to create a trust, and that he could create a living trust during his lifetime to manage all of his assets, and then for his assets to pass into the trust estate on his death. And he liked that idea, so We recreated his estate and left a larger portion to each of the children that would provide a trust income for them during their lifetime than what would happen to it on their death. It was still a very small percentage of his estate, probably less than 2 or 3%, because he was worth, at his death, over $1 billion.
Now, did he pay you for your legal services? We talked about Franklin Burnson would make it worth your while. How about Donald?
Yes, he paid, and of course he paid it through the company. I was hired by the Don Ray Media Group with home offices in Fort Smith, Arkansas. Now, Reynolds' home in Las Vegas was the titular headquarters for the company. He lived there and had his office and the office of his chief executive, Fred Smith, there in his home. Las Vegas, of course, had no estate taxes in the event of his death, so that all of his estate would not be taxed there.
You had experience with the Burnson Foundation, but didn't you go out and investigate a lot of foundations before you set up the Reynolds Foundation?
It's the Reynolds Business Foundation. What he left on his death is where I traveled around. After Reynolds passed away, all of his estate, except the small amounts left to his three children, went into the foundation. And that's when I went around and investigated other foundations to see how it should be run.
So that was a foundation you were starting then?
The foundation was already in existence when I came onto the scene. And the company funded the foundation during its business years while Reynolds was alive.